You're listening to Life in Deep Ellum's podcast.
Well, today we are going to continue our Lenten series and this journey that we take together every year into the wilderness, where we remember how Jesus went to the wilderness and how he spent time in this place and desolation and alone, and that it wasn't necessarily the easiest place for him to go. And so this week, I started thinking a little bit about this idea of hope, because today specifically, we're going to look at hope in the wilderness. And I realized as I began to study and think about my use of hope in everyday life, that my understanding of hope and biblical understanding of hope were two very different things. They really didn't operate the same way. So as we're starting off this morning, I want you to think about how you generally interact with this idea of hope. How do you use the word hope even? And as I started to evaluate, one of the first things I noticed is that hope comes up a lot in my emails. I hope you have a great week. I hope I get to see you on Sunday. And I was like, is that really hope? And then I thought about it. I use hope a lot whenever I'm talking to my children. I hope you have a great day at school. I hope you have fun with your friends. And I was like, is that really hope? You know, it even came up this week because it finally stopped raining and we got some sunshine. And I'm like, I hope the sunshine lasts. Any of you guys feel that way? But as I begin to evaluate my use of hope, what I realize is that when I talk about hope, and I think this isn't just true of me, I think it's culturally how we interact with this idea of hope, that when we say hope, what we really are referencing are wishes and wants. What we're really talking about are what we really want out of life, or what we really wish for a situation. And it's really, when we say hope, we're talking about some specific outcome we want in the future. That's really what we're talking about. And the challenge to that is understanding that whenever our hope, our wishes, and our wants are directed towards specific outcomes, we're kind of setting ourselves up for disappointment. When we're depending, our hope is dependent on a specific outcome that we're wishing for or wanting, we're going to be set up for disappointment. So we're going to look at some scripture today, but I would love, if you don't have a Bible already, if there's not an electronic format you're comfortable using, if you'll raise your hand, one of our ushers will bring one to you. And as they do, I want to tell you an experience about disappointed hope for me. If you know me very well, you know that I have a complicated relationship with food. Meaning I really, really love some food, and I really, really hate other foods. Like, there's a general, like, I like, but whenever it comes to foods that I love, I have very strong emotions towards those feelings, or towards those foods. And so one of the things that's on that love list is sweet potato fries from Good Friends. Any of you guys are with me on that? It's amazing. So one night we had friends coming over, and we decided instead of cooking that we were going to get food from Good Friends, and I was so excited because that meant I was going to get the best sweet potato fries in the whole wide world. So all Joel had to do was go pick up the food and to make sure that the sweet potato fries were in the bag of food. I mean, I took care of the ordering and everything, and I was like, just make sure you bring the sweet. I had been talking about these sweet potato fries for hours leading up to him going to pick them up the food. And so he comes back and he begins to unpack the bag, and you can see the distress building on his face as he realizes the sweet potato fries are not in the bag. And if you think Joel was distressed by the fact that the sweet potato fries were not in the bag, you should have seen me. You would have thought in that moment that Joel had said to me, Rachel, I don't love you anymore. Because if he loved me, how could he forget to check to make sure the sweet potato fries are in the bag? I was heartbroken. And in that heartbrokenness, I decided that Joel needed to know how I felt. And so Joel had picked out this particular beverage that was well paired for the food that we were going to be enjoying that evening, and he had been really excited about what he was going to get to drink that night. And so I did not pour it down the sink, but I did hide it away in our laundry room. And so Joel is looking for this drink, and he's like, where is it? And I sat there for a couple of minutes wondering about what kind of human I was before I finally said, it doesn't feel good, does it, when you're looking forward to something and then it's not there? And then proceeded to give it back to him. So I was ridiculous, I can own that, but I was also really disappointed. I had been wishing and wanting those sweet potato fries, and they were not there. And it was sad. But sometimes our wishes and wants aren't that frivolous. Sometimes they're sincere. Sometimes the things that we're wishing for and we're wanting are really sincere and important to us. You know, we can hope that our friend beats cancer. We can hope that our family remains safe. We can hope that the depression and anxiety we struggle with gets better. We can hope good things for our marriages, but the reality is the same. Whether we're wishing and wanting frivolous things or we're wishing and wanting for sincere things, we do not control the outcomes. And so to put our hope in some future outcome is a dangerous thing. You know, it's at that very point where our wishes and wants are frustrated. It's at that point of disappointment that we begin to get hope and faith kind of confused, where what we wish and want for begins to then somehow say something about God's reliability. And that is a place that can cause us a lot of pain. So I think one of the first things when we talk about hope this morning, I want us to understand is often our understanding of hope and what the Bible actually describes as hope are two very different things. So I want us to talk just a little bit about this biblical understanding of hope, because we use these terms, wishing and wanting, but the Bible uses two very different terms. And first, I'm going to give you those Greek words. The first one is elpis, and the second one is hupomone. And elpis, it's this word for hope, and it just means confident trust. Confident trust. And hupomone means patient endurance. And those are the two words that the New Testament uses to describe hope. Confident trust, patient endurance. Not wishing and wanting things, but confident trust and patient endurance. And both of these things, by their very nature, require patience. I loved what Joel shared last week. He said that our primary resource in the wilderness is time, which sets us up well to experience hope in the wilderness, because hope requires patience. So this morning, as we look at this idea of how the wilderness provides us the perfect setting to practice hope, for those of you who are like, I kind of think maybe I am in a wilderness, I want you to just enjoy this time. Take it as a place to practice what we're going to talk about. So let's get started by looking at Mark 1 together. I believe this is where you guys spent some time last week. And it's where we're going to start again today. So Mark chapter 1, and we're going to start reading in verse 10. And we're going to start in verse 10, and Jesus is being baptized, has just been baptized as verse 10 begins. It says, just as Jesus was coming out of the water, he saw heaven being torn open and the Spirit descending on him like a dove. And a voice came from heaven, you are my son, whom I love, with you I am well pleased. At once the Spirit sent him out into the wilderness, and he was in the wilderness for 40 days being tempted by Satan. He was with the wild animals and the angels attended him. What I want to highlight in Jesus' baptismal experience is you want to talk about a human experience of hope, of getting everything that we could possibly wish for and want. How many of us wish that God would speak to us out loud? Right? Jesus gets that exact experience. Jesus is there, and this voice thunders from heaven. You are my son, whom I love, with whom I am well pleased. And it was clear in that moment that God was with him, and God saw him, and God affirmed him. So we're like, clearly God loves Jesus. What more could a person hope for? But then what happens? Look at verse 12. It says, at once the Spirit sent him out into the wilderness. You go from this, like, glorious experience, and then to the wilderness immediately thereafter, where Jesus is left for 40 days, alone, without food, without comfort. Why? Why would God do that to his beloved son? Why, after this experience of affirmation, does he then throw him into the wilderness? Well, the nature of the wilderness is that it will try our hope. And in the wilderness, Jesus is experienced there, tested both his confidence in God and his ability to endure. And those are two things that we don't really want tested, but it is a part of just this world. And Jesus experienced it too. So that's one of the things that we have to remember at Lent, is we are never alone in the wilderness, in the sense that we can always go to Jesus, who knows exactly what it's like to be there. He literally, in all of the ways that matter, knows what it's like to be in the wilderness. So I want us to dig into a little bit. If wilderness is the place where our hope is tested, what is that hope that we're called to? What does that hope really look like? Something you need to understand up front about hope is not all hope is created equal. There is a hope that will serve us really well, and there are other kinds of hope that are going to cause us a lot of pain. There is a hope that will serve us well, and there are other hopes that are going to cause us a lot of pain. I was talking with some friends this week just about what their experience of Christian hope was, and I found it interesting the way that one of my friends described it. She said this. She said, hope is an unattainable thing. You could reach for it, but you won't get it. Hope is an unattainable thing. You can reach for it, but you're not going to get it. And some of you may resonate with that idea of hope being a real struggle, that it's this unrealized longing. And something you may find encouraging about biblical hope is that biblical hope acknowledges something is missing. Even in the midst of hope being this confident trust in God, biblical hope acknowledges that something is missing. And we see this in Paul's writings in Romans. In Romans 8, he says, "For in this hope we were saved, but hope that is seen is no hope at all." I want you to think about that. Hope that is seen is no hope at all. Who hopes for what they already have? But if we hope for what we do not yet have, we wait for it patiently. And there is this tension between not having and patiently waiting, and that tension is hope. That place, that space in between not having and patiently waiting, that's hope. And I was telling the band beforehand, I wish that I had been able to do this 30-minute pre-sermon for you guys, because hope is such an amazing and nuanced concept in the New Testament, and there are so many aspects of it I would just have a blast going into today. But for the purposes of time, because time is an unlimited resource in the wilderness, but we are here this morning, I have time constraints. So for our purposes today, I want you to understand this first concept of hope, this elpis, as confident trust in God. Confident trust in God. There was a quote by a theologian named Moltmann, and often I try to take their ideas and make them a little bit more accessible, but I felt like he just worded it so well. I wanted to share it with you this morning. He wrote, "The righteous are always referred to what God will do, so that hope is not directed toward anything specific, nor does it project its own view of the future, but it consists in general confidence in God's protection and help." That biblical hope isn't about some future outcome that we're hoping for, some picture of the future that we want. It is really confidence in God's ability to protect and help us. How many of you have ever really hoped for something that to you was big and important? Yeah, I think we all have. Last Friday, I was getting ready to go out of town, and Sayla and Haven were going to go to my dad's house to spend some time with him, and it was all working out beautifully, because since I was going to be out of town speaking at a conference in another church, that meant Joel was going to have the whole weekend to himself, the girls were going to get to go to my niece Coraline's birthday party, and I wasn't going to have to feel guilty at all about being gone. So it was wonderful. It was fantastic. Until Friday morning, as I'm packing up my stuff, I get this call from the school nurse. And the school nurse says, hey, Selah's feeling ill. Her stomach is really bothering her. I think you should come get her. I was like, okay, well, this may throw a kink into our really great plans. And so I went to the school, picked her up, brought her home, put her in bed, and then I called Joel. And I said, hey, Joel, I don't know if everything's going to work out the way that we were hoping for because Selah's feeling sick, and we can't send her to my dad's if she has, you know, something that's contagious. And so I explained it to him, then I call my dad, and Selah overhears the whole thing. And she comes out of her room, and she is devastated, and she is bawling, and she is so upset in that moment. And she looks at me, and she goes, you ruined everything! And she may have repeated it multiple times. It was about 3 years sooner than I was ready for it. But she was just so upset, and I get it. Like, I understand why she felt like I was ruining everything, and the moral of the story is her daddy saved the day, and she got to go. Don't tell her, like, it was just gas. But she was so sad. She was so sad. And she's 9, so it makes sense. And it wasn't fair, and her hope had been disappointed. And you know, that for her was a really big deal. And we know that feeling, that pain that comes when our hopes are disappointed. But I want to contrast that experience with the one Paul describes in 2 Corinthians 4. In 2 Corinthians 4, verses 16 through 18, he says, therefore, we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. It's that tension between what is seen and unseen. And the author of Hebrews gets even more explicit. In Hebrews 11:1, the author says, now faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. Hope is confident trust in God. And that trust comes from knowing that despite the difficulty of our present circumstances, God's character is one that can be trusted. He will ultimately set all things right. He will ultimately set all things right. That what is going on around us, it does not have the last word in terms of our hope. And over the last few years, what I've learned is that hope, I used to think it was like this feeling of longing, but what I've learned is hope actually feels a lot like peace. Hope actually feels a lot like peace. For much of my life, I was a woman with a plan. I mean, and that started when I was, like, little. You know, I knew what I wanted to do when I grew up. I knew when God called me into the ministry that he had other plans for me. But despite always being a woman with a plan, I struggled deeply with this tension of hope. There was always something that I was wanting from God, and the thing that I really wanted him to do was make sure that my life meant something. I mean, I wanted him, I was like, God, you can do whatever you want to with me as long as it means something. I will endure whatever suffering and pain and trials you put me through as long as it means something. As long as in the end I can look back over my life and be like, yeah, God gave me a challenge and I conquered it. There was a mountain that I climbed and I was okay with struggle as long as it was like a self-selected burden. I was okay with that. You know, but as I have gotten older, I've come to this place where all of that ambition I don't experience it in the way that I used to. It isn't this longing and striving and like one day out there, God will do something with me. What I've begun to experience is I have really wrestled with and come to a different understanding of hope is I don't really worry that much anymore about what God has for me in the future or what he wants to do with me or ultimately where life will take me. That what I have come to understand is what God wants me to hope for is that in this present moment that I will trust him. that in this present moment, I will surrender myself and my life and my keeping to him. And I have come to accept that as long as I make myself available to him and I'm willing to do the hard work of being me, because being who God has created you to be is a lot harder than doing things, that if I will do the work of just being me, that what comes is I can trust that I am as he wishes me to be. Otherwise, I would not be as I am. I can trust that I am as God wishes me to be. Otherwise, I would not be as I am. And that is the peace, that feeling, that settledness that comes with hope. Yesterday, I wrote down a quote that I saw Will share on Facebook. Since he shared it on Facebook, I didn't ask for permission to share it in my sermon. I figured it'd be okay. But Will shared this, and it was from one of his friends. And it says, I realized my entire life, God had been working within me, without me, and when I finally surrendered, we got to know each other. And when I read that, I thought, now that's hope. That is hope. And hope is really often experienced as a quiet peace. That I know that in the face of all that is unseen in the future, God right now, right here, can be trusted. And Jesus showed us what that looks like in the wilderness. In the face of temptation, he soundly centered his confidence in God. That is where he was, confidence in God. As the tempter came, as Satan came to him, Jesus said things like, man shall not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God. Do not put the Lord your God to the test. Worship the Lord your God and serve only him. And hope is that kind of confident trust that right here, right now, all of my hope for the future is not in outcomes, it's not in other people, it's not other things. All of my hope right now is centered in the Lord. I can trust the rest of that, all that is unseen to God. This week I posted a warm-up exercise for those of you who are on the Life in Deep Ellum Facebook, not page, but group. And so I encouraged people to pay attention to places where you experienced hopefulness or hopelessness over the course of the week. And where you felt hope to really identify what are you putting your hope in? What is that place that you're putting your confidence and your trust? And I wanted people to attend to this. Is our trust, is our hope really in God? Or do we put it in things like friends or our spouse, like I did for Joel with the sweet potato fries, or political parties, or in our job? Where are we really placing our trust? Because the psalmist wrote this, and I think this is pretty profound for us today. The psalmist said in Psalm 20, verse 7, some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we trust in the name of the Lord our God. There are a lot of things we can hope in, but one of the things I read this week resonated deeply with me, and the writer said this, where there is not hope in God, such confidence is irresponsible security. Where there is not hope in God, such confidence is irresponsible security. And if you want to talk about someone who has been good over the course of the majority of her life and putting hope in her own abilities and her own intelligence and her own ability to manipulate and control outcomes, you're looking at her. And to go, wow, that is actually irresponsible security. And irresponsible security hurts. At least that's my experience. When we put our hope in anything other than God, we're wading into that territory where hope becomes pain. And what I mean is this, when we hope in things or outcomes, it hurts. Whether that's me wishing for good in my marriage or good for my kids or good for this community or good for my friends, anytime my hope is tied to the outcome of something in the future, it hurts. Because it produces in me anxiety and fear, a concern about what I'm going to lose or what may not happen. But hope, the kind of hope that the Bible encourages us towards, that is this confidence in God, that kind of hope brings us peace. And that is often how we can tell whether we're leaning in towards the type of hope that is going to cause us pain, or the type of hope that the Bible talks about that brings peace, because one hurts us and we feel it in our bodies, and the other one brings us to peace. So when you're hoping for something and it's painful, you're probably hoping the wrong way. When you are hoping for something and there's all these uncertainties and all these unknowns and you don't know how things are going to be, but you still have peace, that's when you know you are really trusting in God. So there's a hope, lots of hopes that will bring us pain, but there is a hope that will bring us peace. And the last thing I want you to know specifically about this kind of hope is this kind of hope always leads us to trust God with the future. That he is in the unseen. I tell people often, you know what? God is in the future, but we only experience him in the present. And so if we're trying to get out there in the future and worry about all of these things, and that's not where you're going to experience hope. You leave the unseen to God, and you experience him right here, right now, with you in this present, and leave the unseen to him. I loved what one of the theologians said this week. So here's another quote. Hope is not concerned with the realization of a human dream or the future, but with the confidence which, directed away from the world to God, waits patiently for God's gifts, and when it is received, does not rest in its possession, but in God. I love that, that even when we get what we hope for, that thing in the future that we left to God's care and keeping, even when we get it, we don't rest in the possession of that, we still rest in him. And so in hope, we are literally waiting on the Lord. That is literally what you do when you are hoping. You are waiting on the Lord, trusting quietly in him. And the prophet Isaiah tells us in Isaiah 40, 31, but those who wait or hope or trust, depending on what version you read, and the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. Hope doesn't disappoint. Hope gives us the grace, the mercy, the endurance we need for the moment. And that's the other aspect of hope that's emphasized in the New Testament, this endurance. Hupomone, this ability to patiently endure, specifically to endure suffering and tests and trials. The interesting thing is in the New Testament, you have Paul who loves this idea of elpis, this idea of confident trust. And then you have the Apostle John who's like, I'll use that word like twice, but most of the time I'm going to talk about faith and hupomone. And I'm going to talk about faith and trust and hupomone as the way that you hope. That it's through this endurance that we find hope. So that's kind of why you have two concepts, is you have Paul, who really likes this one idea of confident trust, and then you have John speaking to it from just a little bit of a different angle. So I want to talk to you a little bit about how John talks about this. The second part that John emphasizes, this hupomone, it really speaks to the effort on our part that hope demands. So it's kind of like in this other concept of confident trust, like you are just learning to wait there on God. You are learning to just trust him, to lean into him. But then hupomone says, okay, and there are some things you can do while you wait. And so this kind of hupomone, it tells us we don't just sit there and cross our fingers, and hope allows us to see where God is at work. But what hupomone does is we see where God is at work, and then we're invited to join him. I was thinking about how do I see this kind of in my daily life, and I thought about what it's like to be a mom. I have this hope for my kids. You know, there are very clearly things that I hope for them, the type of people they will become, the type of lives that they will live, the type of way that they'll love the Lord. But I don't just sit there and go, okay, God, hope you do it. I'm just gonna, like, stay out of your way and cross my fingers and hope for the best, right? That's not how we parent. That's not how we parent at all. Instead, we go, okay, God, I see where you're at work. Show me how to be present and how to support the work that you're doing. The Bible also loves agricultural examples. And so whenever we think about this idea of hope as endurance, you can think about a farmer who goes and they pick the seeds that they're going to plant, and they pick the place where they're going to plant the seeds, and they decide what nutrients they're going to add to their garden, and then they decide they're going to water it. But do they really have any control over making it grow? No. You just, as a farmer, you are faithful to the process season after season, trusting that there will ultimately be the harvest that you need. And that's the kind of endurance that John calls us to. And sometimes it can be passive, but sometimes it's active. Active endurance can be this idea of persevering in good works. That is the active part of endurance, is persevering in good works. But it can also be passive. And passive endurance is the patient endurance in the face of suffering and struggles. Turn with me to 2 Corinthians 12. And we're going to start in verse 8. And here Paul's talking to the Corinthian church about some of his own struggles and places where he had to patiently endure. And he says this. I'm going to start reading at the end of 7, actually. I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me. 3 times I pleaded with the Lord to take it from me. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weakness so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses and insults and hardships and persecutions and difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. And Paul's statement was incredibly countercultural in his day. If you read any of the Greek philosophers, you'll notice that they despise this idea of patient endurance. Greek philosophers believed that all virtues in Greece were categorized as masculine or feminine. And the ability to endure, inner bravery, was a feminine virtue. Hupomone was a feminine virtue. And so the writer Seneca, who was one of the Greek philosophers, he told one of his friends, he said, rather than hupomone, than patiently endure, than have this kind of inner bravery, a man should commit suicide before doing that. Because if you don't have control of your external circumstances, you may break down and prove not to be the man that you thought you were. And so they encouraged them culturally to avoid any kind of inner bravery. I mean, they were all about being heroic and the conquering kind of guys and dealing with external adversity. But when it came to the need to endure, they were like, let the women do that. They know how. They have to go through that whole childbirth thing. They are equipped for that, but not us. If we're faced with that, we are out of here. But Paul said, hey, you know what? I'm going to glory in my weakness. This thorn in the flesh that's been given to me that I asked God to take 3 times and he won't, I'm going to hupomone. I'm going to endure under a burden that I would not choose for myself because I can trust God, and he will give me the grace to endure. And none of us want to suffer. I mean, we may be okay, like I said, under self-selected burdens, but that's not what hupomone, that is not what hope is about. Hupomone, hope, it's specifically, it's not like when I've ran a marathon before. I was not enduring when I ran that marathon because I chose that for myself and I enjoyed it. And I got to the end of it and I was like, look what I did. I ran 26.2 miles. You know, that's not what hope and hupomone is about. Instead, it's the type of endurance that comes when we experience the tests and the trials and the sufferings that we would rather avoid. Thank you very much. That's what hope is really about, enduring through the things that you would not have chosen for yourself. Believing that God is right there with you. My grandfather is still a pretty young man, not quite into his 70s. And he has struggled for the last 2 to 3 years with various forms of cancer, to the point that back in October, he was confined to a wheelchair, really was at a place where mentally he wasn't very present. Sometimes he could interact, sometimes he couldn't. And over the course of the last several months, he's gotten better. The lung cancer is still there. It's a terminal diagnosis, but he has gotten better. And so when I saw him at Christmas, you know, he was communicating. His sense of humor was there. He was really able to, like, track with conversations. It was this really beautiful thing. But my grandfather, like, as we have watched him go through, he's always been a very strong man, has worked out his whole life, has always had a farm and cattle, and he's lost the ability to do all these things that he's loved. But as I've watched him endure this, it has been so inspiring, because in these seasons where he's doing well and he can share with the family how he's feeling, what he said is, you know, guys, my body just doesn't work the way that it usually has for most of my life. And, you know, I think I'm ready. When God decides for me to go home, I'm ready. And he just has this patient acceptance and this endurance, and he's handled all of these crazy challenges that have taken away his ability to speak at times, his ability to walk. He's totally dependent on my grandmother to do everything for him every day. And he's taken it with such grace and such endurance, not because it's something he would have chosen for himself, but because he has this hope. I was talking with my mom two weeks ago, and she told me this story about my grandfather, and she said that my grandma was kind of watching him, and he has this chair that he likes to sit in at their house. And my grandmother said she could tell that he was just kind of lost in thought. And so she asked him, she said, "Tracy, what are you thinking about, babe?" And he told her, he said, "You know, I was just thinking about what God told me." And she said, "Well, what did God tell you?" And he said, "God told me he's going to bring me home soon." And that really scared my grandmother. And so she asked him, she said, "Well, Tracy, how do you know God said that?" And he said, "Oh, he said it to me out loud." It's like, of course he did. But it has been this real encouragement to me to watch my grandfather face, as a relatively young grandfather, all of the challenges that he has with so much hope. Not in the outcome, because he knows where this is going. Not in the belief that he's not going to suffer because he has lung cancer and it's likely. But in the hope that he knows there is something beyond this. That God will ultimately set this right. That God hasn't abandoned him. That God is fully with him. And so the gospel writers say things like this: "And we boast in the hope of the glory of God. Not only so, but we also glory in our sufferings, because we know that suffering produces perseverance, and perseverance character, and character hope." That is what all of these difficulties and challenges are creating in us, making us into the kind of people that will hope. And the endurance Christians have, it's not going to be the kind of complaining, weary, despondent grumbling, because in persevering, ultimately what we meet with is the power of God to endure. The power that we need to endure is given by God himself. And so hope does not call us to avoid suffering and pain or tests and trials. It calls us to believe that God will enable us to endure in the face of anything that we may encounter. And that's why we need that confident trust, because how do you endure if you don't trust that God is with you? When Jesus was suffering in the wilderness, people might ask, "Well, where was God?" And the answer is straightforward, but not necessarily easy. God was still there. God still saw him. Jesus was still his beloved son with whom he was well pleased. That's the answer. God was still there. He was still seeing Jesus, still being with Jesus. Jesus was still his son whom he loved and in whom he was well pleased. But the experience of this life is one of sometimes we are so affirmed by God, and sometimes we are in the wilderness. And Jesus had both of those experiences. I sat with someone recently who was going through something difficult. And sometimes it's hard, but I had to tell her the truth that God is right there with her. And it's difficult as a pastor to say that to someone, because I also have to acknowledge, I realize that may not necessarily be comforting to you right now. Because if God is there, the natural question is, well, why isn't he doing something right now? And it's not always easy to then say, well, I don't know. I know he's with you. I know he's for you. I don't know why the intervention you're hoping for hasn't come in the way that you want it right now. But hope isn't ultimately about what we wish or what we want, because those things change.
Our hope is settled in a God who is stable and secure and is good and is working for us even when we can't see it. In the Old Testament, it was interesting to learn that there was no real concept of individual hope. All of their hope was this corporate experience. It was God will be faithful to this covenant that he has made to all of his people. And so I realized as I was looking at that this week that maybe the encouragement that we need when it comes to hope isn't just to look at our experience right now in the present, but it's to look at the corporate community of faith, because I can say with great confidence that when we are together and there is a voice together that is being shared, we can speak to God's unwavering faithfulness to us. That I can look back and you can look back and other people can point and say, you know that moment when I didn't think God was being faithful, when I wasn't sure I could trust him? I know I can now. And so sometimes, I've heard Mimo say this, we have to borrow one another's stories. Sometimes we're in the wilderness and we need to borrow one another's stories to be reminded that that hope for those things that are unseen, it's something we can actually rest in. And I wanted to leave you today with a couple of practical ways to do that, because I realize it's not always easy. The first one you guys have heard me talk about, and it's breath prayers. And I am one of those people who sometimes my thoughts can really spiral, and I can start going down this road, and I can see all the things that are coming and all the challenges, and it can make me a crazy person. But what I've learned to do is to interrupt that and to just pray the simple prayer, Lord, all my hope is in you. And I pray that with my breath over and over, and it interrupts that, and it directs me back to that confident trust that hope calls us to. The other thing that you may consider doing is releasing your wishes and wants to God, just giving them to him. In the Old Testament, no expectation was neutral. All expectations were either good or bad. They were either tied to hope or they were tied to fear. And so when you're feeling expectations that are painful, the hopes that are pulling you towards fear, particularly release those to God. You don't have to sit in that kind of pain. You can go to him and acknowledge that all your hope is in him. The other thing you might consider doing is practicing endurance in daily life. And fasting, especially the way we fast during Lent, is a great way to do that, because what does fasting do? It teaches us that not every desire we have needs to be gratified. It teaches us that we can sit in this place of what we want not coming to us and it be good for us. And so you might, even if you haven't been fasting during this season of Lent, you might choose to try that and just see what it produces in you. Some of you, if I could recommend a thing to give up for Lent, maybe Facebook. I have been watching Facebook lately and just going, oh, Jesus, I don't think this is bringing us very much hope in the world. So maybe some of you decide to step away from Facebook for the rest of Lent and see if you don't end up just becoming a more hopeful person in the process. The other thing you might consider doing is waking up to your need for Jesus daily. This is a practice that I do with a great deal of consistency, is before my feet hit the floor in the morning, I spend about 5 minutes just saying, Jesus, today I need you. I need you. And I acknowledge all the places that I need him. And a lot of times where I need him is directly corresponding to things that I'm wishing and wanting. But rather than focusing on those outcomes, I'm focusing on, in these places, I need you. So those are four practices that may help you grow in hope over this Lenten season. Will you guys stand with me? During Lent, there is a benediction that is a communal one that I have decided that I'd like for us to practice together. So if you guys will look at the screen, we will, the first three we all read together, the last one I'll pronounce over us. So, may God, who has forgiven us, fed us, now make us strong for these days ahead. May this lead us, and we be found faithful to follow. May the Spirit drive us into the wilderness, burning away the chaff of our lives and purifying our hearts for all to see and be blessed. And may the blessing of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit be with us and remain with us always. We love you guys. And I hope that you guys find great hope in the Lord this week.